recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Football on off the ball.
I think there is one pretty obvious candidate staring them in the face domestically, and that is Jens Bertel Askew, the Motherwell manager, who has performed wonders with this Motherwell team.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday Night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be speaking to Darren O'Sullivan and David Brady about the weekend's Gaelic football action as the regulation part of the National League came to a close. That's coming up from 8 o'clock. At 8:40, we've got Monday Night Rugby with Fiona Hayes and John Bruin on the football show from 9 o'clock talking about the EFL Cup final at Wembley yesterday. And a pretty mad weekend in the Premier League, which has gone maybe under the radar because it was a cup final, as I say, yesterday. But a lot of the teams in Europe getting smashed over the course of the Premier League weekend. Not Aston Villa, of course, the one European team to hold up their end of the bargain. And of course, Nottingham Forest, after winning on pens on Thursday, they had the privilege of playing Tottenham Hotspur yesterday afternoon. So loads to get stuck into with John Bruin after nine. We will, of course, be paying tribute to Michael Lester over the course of the next few hours as well. The former Sunday Game presenter passing away yesterday at the age of 71. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to get in touch with us on WhatsApp. We would particularly love to hear from you if you're on your way to Prague over the next few days. We are going to be on the ground over there come Wednesday and Thursday, and hopefully a jubilation show on Friday. We're going to have full live radio commentary on Thursday night for the match of Czechia versus the Republic of Ireland. We'll be speaking to the fans, and if you're one of those fans who is getting there by any stretch of the imagination, by any method, whatever way you're getting there, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a WhatsApp, and if you want to hop on the radio, hop onto our social media platforms, we'd love to hear from you. Stephen Doyle will be commentating on Thursday night. Steve-O, how are you doing?
I'm all well, Owen, thank you.
Arthur O'Dea is here. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
And Mick McCarthy is here. Hey, Mick.
Hi, stranger. How are you?
Good. Haven't seen you in a while.
No.
What do we say? I said excitement / terror in the before the 7 o'clock introduction there about Thursday night. Has the terror set in at this stage yet, or are we all just buzzing and excited and looking forward to the exotic surrounds of Prague?
But it's all that feeling where you have you feel like your heart's in your throat.
Anxiety.
Isn't already?
That, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. That's, I've had that since the squad announcements. Honestly, I'm just... I was commentating yesterday
on breaths, mindfulness.
Tottenham Forest. I kept checking the AZ Alkmaar Groningen game while that was on at the same time. And I was just checking Troy Parrott. Let's see, he's okay. And, I was just like worried if he gets taken off, has he been substituted just to come off? Mm. And is he okay? Like, has he been injured? What's going on? He did play the full 90. He's okay.
Stephen Kelleher faking injury on Saturday night scared everybody in the country as well.
Yeah, it seemed to be people really didn't know what was going on there. Yeah. The whole holding both of his calves situation.
Somebody honestly texted with, "It's okay, it's both his calves. There's no way that's real."
Yeah. Or it could have been the most unlucky injury of all time. But if you had just kind of happened upon the images of Quevin Kelleher down, or maybe seen it on Twitter or whatever the case may be, then it would have been heart in the mouth stuff properly. But he seems to be okay. Troy Parrott seems to be okay. Everything is grand for now. If you are still on the fence about going to Prague or not, if you think you might be one of the lucky people to get your hands on tickets, if you go on to Viagogo this evening, the current rate for an away ticket, they are still on sale, away tickets, but the going rate is €80,868.
So,
if you have a spare 80k hanging around, get yourself to check you, although the price of a flight might put you off, because I presume they're extortionate. But if you have your 80k hanging around,
it costs more than the ticket.
That's the situation with Viagogo right now. So I don't know who that seller actually, what they're actually going to do with this when they inevitably don't find somebody to buy it. Are they going to constantly bring this down by, 10K, 10K, 10K?
Well, there'll be so many really wealthy that will just go, I'll head over, get a flight. It's a last minute kind of thing. Buy the ticket off them.
Quite possibly. But
80 grand.
You'll get a ticket for less than 80 grand over there. I'd say.
Do you reckon? Do you think there'd be tickets floating about, as they say?
I think that, like, maybe not all Ireland level floating about, but there'll be one or two, like, won't there? It's like we've got two of the lads. Obviously, there's a good few off the ballers going, and two of the lads aren't accredited, and we'll document that journey. But I'd be surprised if one of the two didn't get a ticket. I just have a feeling.
What would be your upper limit if you're at that point to pay?
Oh, in terms
of you're already there. If you're already there, what were you paying?
You see, look, it's like being in a casino. You know, you're in for a penny, in for a pound. At some point, you just like you've lost touch with reality, and you're just in this sort of like, you know, utopia
full of and, Czech beers, you know, and goulash.
All consequences are for tomorrow. Today it's just about being there for Ireland, getting to the next round of trying to qualify for the World Cup.
I just can't believe it's here. It's like when you talk about Christmas or a wedding or something like that, and it's like it's hard to believe that date that you had circled on the calendar for so long, it's actually the week of it. It was this faraway thing forever, basically, until now. And now it's like, oh my God, this has actually happened. And to that end, I think we may as well kick things off on the news round, Steve-O, because it looks particularly real when you see the Republic of Ireland team back in their sort of training gear, back in front of the media as they were today as well.
Indeed, all 25 players own called up to the Ireland squad arrived fit and healthy at Abbottstown this morning. They all trained for the first time today ahead of one of the biggest matches in years. Thursday's trip to Czechia is the first of two potential pit stops on the road to a place in a first World Cup finals appearance since 2002. Should they progress on Thursday, a game at the Aviva Stadium against either Denmark or North Macedonia awaits. It was revealed yesterday that the head coach, Hamer Hallgrimsson, who previously called for away fans to be moved from the north stand, has got his wish, with the FAI set to move them to a corner in the west stand. Assistant head coach John O'Shea was speaking to the media at FAI HQ today and said that he will come back to his contract talks after these games in the wake of the news that his boss signed a new deal to stay on in his position for the Euro 2028 campaign. The Waterford man spoke about using the momentum of the wins against Portugal and Hungary in these playoff games.
No, listen, it's the case of why you're picked in the squad. You're here to help the team, whatever that role may be, whether it's, as you mentioned, if it's a midfielder, defender, attacker, whatever it is, that the players are here to come in, help, to have that confidence that you're picked because you're good enough, you're picked to come and help the team. I think that's the key bit. It's very straightforward, and you give them the guidance then in terms of when teams are selected, when the opposition, you know who they might be facing, you give them little details and stuff like that. But it's that confidence that the players are here because they're good enough, without a doubt. Listen, I think that's the case of the confidence and the memories, that winning football matches against good opposition does for you, that you do have to, but also you have to have an appreciation of how long the game is, when the game, you know what I mean, you're not going to go gung-ho straight away too. You have to have that game plan, that idea and the calmness to execute it as well. And I think that's what the group has been gaining and gaining in strength. So I think that's the focus mainly, to have that game plan executed and go and win the game.
I think it's an interesting question to wonder if there is any semblance of momentum that comes from the fixtures that took place over 120 days ago. Like, maybe that confidence is something that's carried a few of the players through. Like, it feels that November was a seminal moment in the career of Troy Parrott, and every time you watch him he looks dangerous and he's been on the score sheet so much. So I think that's maybe something that you can actually probably cling to. Other than that, it seems faintly ridiculous to think that there's going to be any continuation of momentum from November.
I think one of the main things we saw, and especially in that Hungary game, was that how many times have we seen, a good portion of this Ireland squad, the players over the last number of years, and granted, a lot more inexperienced than they were in the autumn games, you know, just fade in matches like the last 15, 20 minutes and not being able to come up with a way to get a result. And that's what they've learned to do. And I think a huge amount of credit has to go to Hamer Hallgrimsson for that. He has, I think, improved them mentally to no end, and that is something that they need to, he's going to be able to point to that to them and say, look, whatever happens in this game, we're there for the 90 minutes, the 120 minutes, you need to just keep yourselves in the game. I was kind of chatting to somebody about this earlier on, and just, this might sound a little bit off the wall, but, you know, his career as a dentist, you know, this guy, he prepares people for root canals and really distressing. I hate dentists, and he prepares them for really distressing dental work, you know, and he's able to sit there with people, I'm sure, calm them down, make them feel okay, just chill them out. And I think he might use those skills with the players.
Right. And I'm not being cynical about it, right? But if Troy Parrott doesn't score and it's a valiant effort to lose out, the campaign as a whole would be seen as a pretty poor showing. All in all, like, it's remarkable what they did, but remarkable is almost the word for it, you know? That it's not like it's a body of work over a series of games, like losing in Armenia, all these different bits and pieces, right?
Google games.
Yeah. Now, that's not to take away. They weren't a given. Like, everyone thought we'd get pumped in both. So it's amazing that it's in this position. But I'm just wondering, are we investing way too much in that little bit rather than the whole in terms of when it comes to this? As to your point with the, like, will the momentum carry on from the last two, or will it be a reassertment of the back to what it was before the last two?
A regression to the mean.
What's the true Ireland, I suppose?
Oh, we don't know, but I think there's definitely something to be said for a bit of confidence and belief. And the fact is that they put themselves in a position now that I think they will be different animals coming into this camp than they would have been in any other previous Ireland camp, probably in the last 10 years, you would say, you know, since the Euros in 2016. So I think that has to be of some benefit. And I think then Owen's other point of, like, what Troy Parrott is doing now, and we know the level he's playing at and so on, but, like, I mean, that's as good as any Irish player is going to be at. And he just seems like somebody that is just absolutely in such a, like, he's playing the best football he's ever played in his career. And it's brilliant to see. But I always look at, like, there was such a lack of Irish players playing important roles for their club. It doesn't matter what level they're at. They were like, it's not even just getting minutes. We're always worried about what minutes, but it's like, who are the big players for your team? And you look now, and I was looking through even the Championship this weekend, but you look at, you know, Jake O'Brien, Nathan Collins, captain, Creevan Kelleher, right? That's our Premier League. We've missed out on Josh Cullen. We've missed out on Evan Ferguson. You know, that's gone. But of the players that are fit, it's coming around. You know, look at, like, Ryan Manning and Finn Azaz are really, really two central players for a really good Southampton team that are flying up the Championship table. Like, that matters for something. You know, like, talk about Troy Parrott, talk about whoever. I just feel like there's a Darragh O'Shea, that Ipswich team. He's probably the leader of that team, you know. This Jason Malumbi is similar at West Brom. Jason Knight's been playing centre-back for Bristol for the last few weeks because he's the guy that they plug in when they need somebody in a crisis, you know? Like, all of these things matter, you know? And I think over the course of, like, again, we don't know what the momentum is going to be, if there is any at all. We don't know what the real Ireland is. But I'm just a lot more enthused by the form of our players than I usually am going into a camp.
Mm. And the manager himself, like, because he made the tactical switch in that game to drop Finn Azaz deeper towards the end of the match. It was a crucial change in the game because it was Azaz then who started to release players behind the Hungary defence, including for the Troy Parrott goal. Now, if you're Finn Azaz going into the Irish camp, you're kind of going, my last game, I was absolutely on fire and a big contributor to helping Troy Parrott score that goal. He's not going to forget that. That's going to be on his mind, definitely going into the game this week. And he's going to be, as well as what Mick talks about there, his club form, he's going to be hugely confident.
Yeah, the one thing I would say is that, because when we've had the many, many talks around Ireland in a state of footballing crisis, I certainly say when they lose in the Yerevan, that was a perfect example of us going deep on the root and branch reform that's required in Irish football. I think there was generally kind of an underappreciation of how good some of the Irish footballers are that are in this era of footballer, like Josh Cullen, perfect example, that I genuinely believe that he has underperformed or had underperformed prior to the last window in an Ireland shirt. And I think his injury going into this window is potentially catastrophic for Ireland in qualifying for this World Cup. I don't think there is anybody who can come in and do his sort of job. So he's the perfect example of what you're talking about. Somebody who's really important for their club, who has a leadership role for their club and has probably a decent level of standard to boot. There were only a handful of them, it feels, in the Ireland squad, particularly at Premier League level.
Mm. I'm not sure when there wasn't, though. When did we not have those kinds of players?
Well, I'm probably never. Like, my point is that whenever we've had these conversations, say, post-Luxembourg, post-Armenia, you know, this idea that, look, they're just better than the footballer that is representing the Republic of Ireland right now.
Well, Josh Cullen wasn't that type of player up until about 2 years ago. You know, like he was when Burnley were in the Premier League 2 years ago, when he was playing the exact same role for Ireland, he was struggling to get in the team, and they had a year in the Championship. He's become their captain, and he useless talking about Josh Cullen at the moment. Obviously, like it's not he's not
I don't know why he came to my
he's
mind.
Not the person to be focusing on, I suppose. But I know what you mean about the type of player we've always had. We've always had that like dogged, determined, like natural leader. You know, but they weren't always thriving at club level, and I feel like a lot of them are at the moment, and that's actually their role within a team as opposed to like the minutes they're collecting as the 10th most important player on the team.
Prague Week is off to a great start. I brought up Josh Cullen 18 minutes into our first show.
No, look, I'm not my thing is not with the players, whatever, the players are the players. I'm still it's more so the Hamer situation that I'm not in, even the John O'Shea there talking with new contract. It's like it'll be moot if they go and qualify. Yeah, then it'll be mission accomplished.
We did by say last means. Week when the contract was announced, isn't this on the back of two big results?
Yeah.
The body of work maybe isn't something that you'll be rushing to get that deal done before the games. But, you know, you can only go on the last couple of performances.
That's a trend. That's a trend beyond Ireland.
Yeah.
Thomas Tuchel has a deal for 2028 before, then they're expected to go and probably win that World Cup. So, like, yeah, no, I get that, but I find it astonishing in some ways.
Yeah, James in Longford says, heading to Prague on Thursday, nervous about my 45-minute connection in Edinburgh. Please give me some reassurance that I'll make my Jet 2 plane. Ryanair might be early to Edinburgh. Fingers crossed, emoji from James. Best of luck. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Hopefully it's a good Jet 2 holiday for you. Tommy in Belfast says, I travelled to Japan in 2002 on a car loan from the credit union to stay with a mate who was teaching English and had a blast for 2 weeks. He secured tickets for Ireland versus Germany, and that was a day, never mind the whole 2 weeks, that I will never forget. I never thought at the time, though, that it would take so long to get to another World Cup tournament. Unfortunately, I can't go this week. Three kids and a mortgage are seeing to that. Fingers and toes are crossed for this Thursday. You have more from today, Steve-O?
Yep, striker Troy Parrott. Let's focus on the positives here.
Yes.
Striker Troy Parrott came to club action with AZ Alkmaar fit and well, and John O'Shea spoke about his importance to the squad.
It's very important in any team, be it international or club, that you know you have a striker, an informed player that can be so clinical and have an instinct that's so sharp at the minute. It's very important, but also you have to have awareness of the people that are going to supply him as well. Those people too are just as crucial. So it's the whole combination, and any good striker knows if he's not getting the supply. So it's important in that team aspect.
Yeah, we'll have more from the Ireland camp a little bit later on the football show, and they'll be doing media every day this week as well. Our number 0879 180 180, if you want to get in touch this evening. You're turning to yesterday's EFL Cup final next, Steve-O.
Indeed. Well, Arsenal and Manchester City are still on for a treble this season, but of course yesterday's League Cup final result means no historic quadruple for the North London club. City picked up the first major trophy of the year by beating Arsenal 2-0 in yesterday's League Cup final at Wembley. Nico O'Reilly's double was enough to see off their Premier League title rivals. City will be hoping to chase down the league leaders over the next few weeks and still have Liverpool to come in the FA Cup quarterfinals. The two sides, Arsenal and City, that is, meet again in the Premier League next month. Off the Ball will be there for that game on April 19th. Now, unless he's injured, David Raya should be back between the sticks, and the decision to stick with his cup goalkeeper, Kepa Arrizabalaga, came back to haunt the head coach or manager, Mikel Arteta. The Spaniard gifted City their opening goal, Kepa that is, when he dropped to Ryan Cherki's innocuous cross, which Nico O'Reilly converted from close range on the hour mark. Arrizabalaga hasn't played in the Premier League, only in the two cups and the Champions League dead rubber against Kairat this season. Arteta defended his decision and also spoke about helping his players recover from that defeat at Wembley.
I understand that, but I have to do what I feel is right, which is honest and which is fair. And I think we have an outstanding keeper on Kepa. He's played all the competition, and I think it would have been very, very unfair for him and for the team to do something different. No, I can never promise a player to play certain competitions, because at the end they have to earn it, and and they have to do enough, like any other position, to do that. We are guided by what we've seen, and when he's done what he's done in the competition, and he helped us to go all the way through here, it's I believe it's the right thing to do, and that's it. And errors are part of football, and today it happened, unfortunately, in a crucial moment. Well, especially to have some perspective on it, and what this team has done in the last 8 months has been incredible. And we're going to use this disappointment and this fire in the belly to have the most amazing 2 months that we have ever together. And that's on us, and we'll manage that energy in the right way. Now we have to go through that pain and disappointment, and it's normal, and it's part of football.
Yeah, Kepa and the EFL Cup final. Name a worse combo. Like, it's just disaster all the time.
Was Caballero not available? Yeah.
Are we saying this is a
deep cut?
Are we saying this is a terrible call from Arteta? Are we saying that the responsibility entirely rests on the goalkeeper? Like, what's the kind
useless.
Of?
They were useless. They were very bad throughout. Like, it's not like that consigned them to it, but they're pretty bad.
Yeah,
don't think you just blame him.
No, one error will cost you if you're not really firing a shot yourself.
The one thing I'll say though is David Raya the best goalkeeper in the world at the moment? Is he? He's up there, top three in current form.
He's in one of the best teams, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, I just think he's been outstanding. I think.
Yeah, he's been.
I think he's an unbelievable keeper, right? What, like? Why do you have to keep Kepa happy?
Yeah.
Can you not just get another backup keeper if he doesn't want to sit on the bench forever? You know, it's like, you've got your guy. Like, I don't understand this. Oh, we have to play. Even when it was like Kelleher or whoever, like, if you're, it either matters to win a tournament or it doesn't, you know? And this idea that you would play a lesser player and that goalkeeper is somehow a different than every other position in this, like, you know, well, obviously we were playing, you know, the young lads in the early rounds, but as it's gone on, we've taken it more seriously and now we're playing our first team. But goalkeeper doesn't apply to that. So we play a guy who's been a basket case of a goalkeeper for about 7 years now. You know, and it's just like, it just feels, I don't really care. I actually thought, I'm always critical of Arteta. I thought he spoke well there. I thought his, you know, we've often been critical in the past about how his messaging and the way he talks to the media could bleed negatively within the team. I think that messaging is exactly the right way he should be talking heading into the rest of the season, where Arsenal could still achieve something historic.
They performed
really poorly yesterday, and I'd be just a little bit concerned about it.
The reason why you keep Kepa happy is that if David Raya gets injured, then you have a perceived excellent option as your backup goalkeeper. Like, Arsenal signed this guy because he was very good with Bournemouth last season, Premier League standard, had kind of got his confidence back, and they deemed him to be the best available second goalkeeper option they could find. And I think that's kind of fair enough. Then you kind of need to keep that guy sweet. And the general way of doing that, and maybe you're copying this from other managers,
by
playing that goalkeeper in the least important competition of the four competitions that you're playing in. So if Raya goes down at some stage between now and the end of the season, you've got a goalkeeper who is trusted by the manager who steps in. I think that's what the logic is behind it.
Who's perceived as being trusted anyway, yeah. Okay.
Sorry, but this game is huge in Arsenal season. This is the game where they could have laid down a marker against Manchester City, who are the only team that can take the Premier League title for them. Premier League title is massively, massively important. If they don't win the Premier League title from here, like, this could be hugely damaging for Arteta and for this Arsenal squad. So to actually take the risk of playing Kepa Arrizabalaga, I checked the stats yesterday when I saw him starting. He's played 13 matches against Manchester City. He's kept 3 clean sheets in those games. 1 clean sheet in 8 Premier League matches against Manchester City. He's conceded 23 goals in those 13 matches. That's nearly a rate of 2 goals per game. Like, don't.
That'll be every keeper, though, wouldn't it?
But this, I'm sorry, but this Arrizabalaga, we know, and as known, you've alluded to his League Cup final performances before. This guy is a headbanger. And but seriously, you know, some of the stuff that he's done in the past has been absolutely mad stuff. Like, David Raya is arguably Arsenal's best player so far this season. You know, like, there's none of the outfield players really standing out. And why would you not put him in for the most important game so far of the season? Because if you win this League Cup, there's a really good chance that you've taken a psychological advantage against your nearest Premier League title rivals. And this nonsense about, you've got to be fair to Kepa, like, just, that doesn't matter. Your job is to win the trophy. Your job is to win the match, win the trophy, and then go on and try and win the rest of the trophies for the rest of the season. And if, like, taking a risk. Like, you need to get every edge possible over this Manchester City team going into that game. And one edge would be to put in your best goalkeeper for the match. And I think if David Raya had played in that game, they would have won the final. Like, I think it was that error was so damaging to them in the game, which had been pretty uneventful up until then. Now, I know some people made the argument about, well, Guardiola put in Trafford instead of Donnarumma. Well, like, that could be an upgrade, to be honest with you, because have you seen Donnarumma playing in goal this season? Like, he's not that good. Like, he's pretty average, and he's made a lot of clangers this season.
So has Trafford, in fairness.
Yeah,
like
he has.
The Tottenham game early in the season.
He has. So you might put them on an even keel there, but... Like, David Raya is by far and away a better goalkeeper than Kepa or Ether Balaga. You play your best team in the big matches. That's for me, anyway.
Yeah, I also, just to that point as well, I don't think Pep Guardiola or Man City need to win it.
Yeah.
Yesterday. I think they can afford to do that. They've done it. Like, I think.
What if Arsenal end up winning the league and there's no. What if their first game back is Southampton? I think their second game back is Bournemouth. What if they win those two games and they're right back on track?
Well, they might be right back on track, but do you not want to win as much as you can win?
100%, but like, he didn't try to lose the game yesterday.
Well, he weakened his team.
But he had kept in goal for the whole competition. Like, it's off a train. Like, if you start with a guy...
It's not an unusual thing for
it's
him.
It's not unusual,
why
would
you change him for the Chelsea game?
It's not unusual. It's definitely not unusual. But I think, to your point, like, I just think it's a one-off. I just think it's almost... Right, if say they won yesterday and that was all they won, that would still be seen as a failure, right?
Yeah.
But I still think once... If they were to have won that yesterday... And had that banked and go, this season, whatever happens, is not a write-off. This isn't a waste of time. We've done something. As the minor of the four, but we've done it. We can do it. Mm. As of yet, they're still uncertain if they can. And now you'd have serious questions over them after that performance in any of the big European games coming up, any of those knockout
games. That for me is the thing.
Like, they were overawed by it, or something was wrong.
It's a bigger issue than the goalkeeper.
It definitely is, but the concern for Arsenal now is what Manchester City exposed in a big one-off game, that I think if it's even Sporting will look at that and smell a bit of blood. If Arsenal get past Southampton, whoever they have in that FA Cup semi-final, it could be Manchester City again, will smell blood. I actually think when it comes to the Premier League, of the three remaining competitions, that's almost the most likely for them to win at this point. I think that's not a hot take at all. They're 9 points clear at the top of the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But I think in a big Champions League match against a Barcelona, a Bayern Munich, a Paris Saint-Germain, you're now backing the opponent against Arsenal after the evidence of yesterday in a big game. He got out-tacticked by Pep Guardiola. So
the title race isn't over yet, though.
No, it's not over. Yeah, it's not a guarantee. They could come away with
that
nothing.
That game, 6 points, and who knows?
Yeah, they have a game in hand as well against Palace, I think, isn't it?
Mm. Do you want to run us through the rest of today's football news, Steve-O?
Yes. Well, to Ben White, there is some good news for Arsenal fans because Ben White has returned to the England squad for the first time in over 3 years. The Arsenal defender last represented the three lines at the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. He's been called up to replace Gerald Kwanzaa, who's been ruled out with a thigh injury.
Didn't Ben White tell England to go shag off? Like, he didn't want to play with them.
Steve Holland.
Holland, yeah.
Isn't it great? Mate? Just, you know, just do what you want. Like, you know, still get picked ahead of Trent Alexander-Arnold.
What is the crack with that? Is it a joke? Like, how could he not be picking him? How could he be picking Ben White over Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Well, Alexander-Arnold hasn't played a huge amount of games for Real Madrid.
He's played more games this season than Ben White, I guarantee you that much. Yeah.
But defensively, he's not.
He's not, but I don't know. I still feel he has a lot more upside.
Yeah, I think Tuchel places more importance on it, defensive abilities with fullbacks like that. This isn't a smart arse answer. I think he does place more, he wants a more solid fullback, basically.
Oh, and I was saying earlier to Arthur that this is the World Cup year when you know that we're flooded with English media, when you start thinking about football in terms of who's in the England squad of a team that I don't even care about in the World Cup, but watching the Brighton-Liverpool match at the weekend, I'm going, how is Danny Welbeck not in the England squad? Like, also, who cares if Danny Welbeck is in the England squad?
Yeah, sorry, but White can cover centre-back as well, and also he's a bit more of a dynamic, running forward kind of... in the style of a Thomas Tuchel team.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Tottenham's struggles in the Premier League continued yesterday. They lost 3-0 to Nottingham Forest in a relegation six-pointer at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It leaves Spurs with just a one-point cushion from the relegation zone with seven matches to play. Tottenham have offered condolences also to their interim head coach, Igor Tudor, following the death of his father. The 47-year-old Croat did not undertake post-match media duties following Spurs' 3-0 home defeat by Nottingham Forest on Sunday. The Spurs club says they are deeply saddened by the news and their thoughts are with Tudor and his family. He was, of course, appointed in February and has yet to lead them to a win in the Premier League. Also yesterday, West Ham failing to capitalise on that Spurs loss as they suffered a 2-0 defeat at the hands of Aston Villa. Sunderland, meanwhile, did the double over Newcastle with a 2-1 win at St James's Park, thanks to that Brian Broby last-minute winner.
Leo's been in touch to say, Raya is the best keeper in the world that is not over 6 foot. I only noticed last week that his defenders tower over him. How he gets to some of those shots is remarkable. And Leo, your language is spot on. David Raya is exactly 6 feet, 0 inches tall, so mm-hmm. not over 6 foot technically. So,
remember Shea Given was always thought of as small for a keeper. I think he's 6'1".
Mm.
So
in this day and age,
you'd be fine.
Yeah. Big hands though.
Big hands.
But really, like, have you ever stood, you know, you've met Shea Given, haven't you?
Yeah.
She's bloody big hands.
So you're just thinking about that gloves. Dublin bus ad where he had the city gloves on.
You're on to the women's side of things here and Chelsea.
Of course, Chelsea playing Arsenal in the Women's Champions League quarter final this week. And Chelsea, well, they got big, big injury problems. Only 8 players were present for their open training session this morning. And now Sonia Bompastor has played down the injury situation ahead of that quarter final against the Gunners. The Chelsea boss is confident the likes of Lucy Bronze and Aggie Beaver-Jones should be fit for the game.
And then finally on the football front, what's the latest on the Joanna Byrne situation?
Yes, well, Joanna Byrne has reiterated her commitment to Drogheda United following the decision of owner group Trivella to remove her from her position. The club's US-based owners say the move is due to a breakdown in trust and confidence rather than political differences. In a letter addressed to the fans, she says, Drogheda United has been the longest love of my life. She believes the underlying issue is her stance on the upcoming games against Israel in the UEFA Nations League for the Republic of Ireland men's team.
Okay, more still to come on this extended news round after the break. And the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Welcome back to Monday's extended news round. What's next for us, Steve-O?
Well, Gaelic Games, just to a little recap on yesterday's results from the National Football League. Galway securing their place in Division 1, of course, for next year. The Tribesmen sent the Dubs down with a 2-point win over Ger Brennan's team yesterday. The Dublin boss said he had no complaints after being sent off for the clash with a Galway selector at half-time. Kerry will face Donegal in the Division 1 final after a draw with Armagh, while Jim McGuinness's men ended the league phase with a 4-point win over Downed Monaghan. Mayo got the win and bragging rights over neighbours Roscommon with a 21-point victory at McHale Park, while Cork and Meath will play Division 1 football next year, while Down and Wexford are up to the second tier.
Yeah, the Wexford story is remarkable. Last gasp win for them against Westmeath in what was a promotion showdown. Literally the last kick of the game sends Wexford up to Division 2, which is remarkable. We'll be playing some brilliant audio for you in the next hour of Liam Spratt on South East Radio, calling that magical moment for them. You were watching Galway-Dublin yesterday, Mick. Scenes before half-time, probably the big talking point from it, actually detracting from the end game of the actual football, which actually is far more
and
important.
There was loads. It was brilliant because it was like, it wasn't like last year was unbelievable where like anything could have happened to 7 teams. It wasn't quite that, but it almost has set the tone now for like the last round of the Football League at the moment. And it was good again yesterday and it was interesting. And you didn't know what was going to happen with the Kerry Armagh game, so there was no real way of knowing what Dublin needed. So all that was thrilling. But Galway were very, very good in the way they came back into the game. Both the hurlers and footballers this week, they'll take a lot in the way that they stuck at it, you know. And I think, but at the same time, I think if Dublin had 15 men, they would have won the game and actually weren't bad. You know, like I heard Morris Brosnan, he was on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, saying that like their first half performance and their performance against Roscommon was the times Dublin have played well this year, and that's what they'll hope to get. My concern was they got a free in, they were 2 points down, 66 and a half minutes on the clock. It was a decent stoppage on the stop clock. And they played around with the ball for like 3 minutes, looking to get the shot for a 2-pointer. And it was really lethargic. Like it was just that and it ended up with Conn taking a kind of a pot shot with 15 seconds to go or something like that, you know, and the game was over from there. I just couldn't, it just felt to me like, and it's a remarkable thing to say that like the game has almost passed Dublin by in a way. Like they weren't taking any 2-point shots last year when everybody else was like, you know, running amok. This year it's like they're trying to do it but don't quite know how to. It was like there was a real lack of understanding of what was needed there. There was a lot of time left. They got the ball. They had a good few chances for a 1-pointer. They could have got the ball back again. They could have got a 2-pointer to win it, which it turns out they would have needed anyway. A draw wouldn't have been good enough for Dublin because Armagh did get the draw with Kerry. So just, I actually couldn't believe what I was watching. It was like when you were so used to those colours doing the exact right thing to close out a game and then seeing them do the exact wrong thing. Like Galway just like were, I can't believe how easy this is. They're just defending the 40-yard arc and that was all they had to do. Dublin weren't able to do anything else, you know. So it's just, again, it's almost bizarre to see Dublin in this situation, whereas I just don't think they are as at it as all of the other teams in terms of exposing what the game is now versus what it was 2 years ago.
Are Galway All-Ireland contenders on the other hand?
I don't know about that. Like, we still don't. Shane Walsh and Damien Comer still aren't there. They obviously have like really good footballers. They've got a good bit of strength and depth, Galway have as well, but they weren't great for the first 50 minutes of that game, you know. So it's hard to know who's All-Ireland contenders, to be honest, isn't it, really? Like, you know, after watching the league where Kerry and Donegal have stood out, Mayo excited people. But Galway probably just did enough, I suppose. We'll sort of see what they are come. Like, they'll have a home semi-final and then they'll have either Mayo or Roscommon in the Connacht final. And we kind of go from there. That's when their season starts, really, isn't it?
Yeah. What sort of expectations, I wonder, do we have for Sunday? Because I'm not that bothered about the league final was the sounds coming from Jim McGuinness 2 weeks ago before they played their penultimate game, or around when they played their penultimate game. And even Jack O'Connor in the aftermath of the Kerry game yesterday was saying, it was never our intention to make the league final. Oops.
Again.
We've ended up there again.
The
Can't
only competition
it.
In world sport that gets less important as it goes on.
Yeah. Is there a chance that it is like a complete false contest on Sunday? I hope not. I hope that the smell of Croke Park.
It's a long time since these teams will play each other again. They're in Croke Park. I don't know. Like, what have Kerry got to lose by not going for it against Donegal? Like, they don't even have a provincial competition to play, in reality.
Listen,
and
your Clare brethren.
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
Kerry's first game.
Lost to Sligo, comeback.
I always feel with the counties, if you get to the, like, you know, okay, so there's certain counties, like there was a many years ago where Mayo got to a final and they won it, and it was a really important trophy for them to win. And in counties in that kind of situation, like if you got a Roscommon in the final or a Monaghan, go win it. It's a great thing for the county. But if you got a Kerry or a Donegal who maybe feel like the All-Ireland title is the big one that they want to win and they're not too bothered, well, just put in, like, maybe play half of your starting team and then put in like 7 or 8 young lads who need the experience of playing at Croke Park in a competitive match. Like, do something like that. Like, make it, you know.
Why is the GEA like that, though? Why is it be all or end all and nothing else? Like, we're talking about Arsenal and Man City there, two of the biggest clubs in world football. And we're arguing about, like, why did they change one player to go and win the fourth most important competition in that they're in this season? Because, like, you're in the final, you go and try and win it, you win silverware, it's brilliant. Whereas it's almost like people are too proud to want to win anything in GAA. If you don't win the All-Ireland, what's the point?
But that is the ultimate goal, and there is a connection.
But it does. There's no connection. How is there any connection?
But all the secrets, the secret blueprint that Jim McGuinness has been working on all winter time, and the new blueprint that Jack O'Connor's.
Well, like, Kerry is like, Kerry are Real Madrid. Like, if you don't win the All-Ireland title, this season is a failure, isn't it?
Completely, yeah.
But Sunday won't be a failure if you win that. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, what, it doesn't have any effect on what's going to happen.
If Kerry won the league title.
Fair enough, don't pay Paddy Clifford if he's only half fit. But other than that, do everything you can to win the game.
If Kerry win the league title and don't win the All-Ireland, it's Madrid winning the Copa del Rey, not the Champions League. It's a failure of a season.
Well, the Arsenal comparison rings true because Kerry have already lost their quadruple after Cork beat them in a McGrath Cup final this year. So that certainly, as you were saying earlier on, yesterday was a seismic day potentially for Arsenal in the pursuit of the Premier League. Could this Sunday be a seismic day for Kerry in their pursuit of the All-Ireland if they fail to beat Donegal?
Do you know, though, Dublin have just got relegated for the second time in 3 years, and it's the second time in 4 years. That hasn't even been part of this conversation.
It's
a much
smaller deal now, isn't it?
It does, but it also does show how deep football is getting. Like, Dublin have definitely slipped, but there are, like, Tyrone finished, what, fifth in Division 2? And nobody's really writing them off this year either. You know, like, there is an unbelievable depth that just hasn't been there before.
Kind of. No one's writing them off, but no one's, I'd say, not many people are shouting for Cork or Meath either to win the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
I think this is a battle for
Dublin, though. This is, like, with the pool of players that Jared Brennan, like, I feel bad for Jared Brennan because, I don't feel bad for him, but it's just, like, this is a monumental task that he has, because he really has taken on the transition, Desi Farrell got the remnants of a great team and managed to get a couple of All-Irelands out of them, but Jared Brennan has a huge task, and I think they're really at risk now of being stuck in Division 2 for a couple of years. I don't think it's going to be as easy for them to get out of it this time, and I'd be majorly worried, because there hasn't been a huge amount of talent coming through the underage teams over the last number of years, and it wasn't that long ago people were talking about they were having serious debates over splitting Dublin in two, and just thank bloody God that didn't happen anyway, I'll tell you that much.
There's one other Gaelic game story you want to touch on here before you round off your news round. Obviously the very sad news yesterday that Michael Lester has passed away at the age of 71. There's a text in here from Dermot in Dublin, who says, "Owen, had the pleasure of meeting Michael Lester on holidays while queuing for an ice cream at my kids nearly 20 years ago. And I got a text from my youngest son yesterday that said, was that GAA man who passed, the man who bought us ice cream when I was younger? An absolute gent, RIP Michael." So Michael Lester actually bought them ice cream, as that text would reveal. Let's play some audio from yesterday, because obviously the tributes were rolling in for Michael, including here on Off the Ball, Colm O'Rourke, who would have been a big part of that epic panel alongside Joe Brawley and Pat Spillane, was speaking to John Duggan on Sunday's Off the Ball. Have a listen.
Like, Michael was in the sort of realms, I suppose, of Mícheál O'Hare and Mícheál Mórahártaí. That's how big a name he was. He was a wonderful man, a consummate professional. He was relaxed, but yet he was always in charge. And he had a beautiful speaking voice, I think, which put everybody at ease who tuned into the Sunday game. And it was a real privilege for me to work with him for 30 years. It was great fun as well. And I suppose we got a great kick out of it. We were part of a fairly rapidly expanding show at the time. But we all knew our place. Michael was the boss. He did it calmly and he was unruffled. And I think he portrayed that to every household in the country. And everywhere you go, went with Michael, people flocked to him because they had great admiration for him as a professional communicator. And no matter where we were, whatever part of the country, people wanted to have photographs taken with him. They wanted to have his autograph. And of course, the ultimate for a lot of people was in places that they could get in and sit in the studio with him for a minute and have their photograph taken with him there. And he was always so polite and friendly and courteous to the public. And I think, he had a beautiful manner.
Yes, indeed. Colm O'Rourke speaking to John Duggan yesterday. And then this morning on Off the Ball Breakfast, Ger and Colm were speaking to Joe Brawley.
I know people say these things after someone's gone, but I genuinely never heard him say a bad word about anybody. Wow. He just always rose above it, and he had a sort of you met him, so he genuinely had this aura, this glow, of everything being fine. And he very relaxed, very and he was a handsome. When he was younger, he was unbelievably handsome. Like, there's my nickname for him was David Hasselhoff. A fading David Hasselhoff, because there were these pictures in RTE of him when he was young. I mean, he was unbelievably good looking. He really genuinely was. He had the whole package, and he was effortless. He had a beautiful family, all of that. But he was a broadcasting animal. Like, that's what he was, and that was inseparable from who he was as a human being. Like, we did a reunion for New York GAA. They brought myself and Michael and Pat and Colm out to New York, and there was a massive crowd and the buzz in the place. And we went up on stage, and I mean, it was just electric. They raised a fortune for Gaelic Park. And it was a good while since we'd all been together, you know, and there was a very, it was a lovely atmosphere there, and it was poignant now.
Yeah.
In light of this, you know.
Yeah, I think we all would have got to know him a small bit over the last couple of years, because obviously when he finished up with the Sunday game, he then had the freedom to do other media, and he was a regular on Off the Ball as a paper review voice in particular. Like, I'm not sure to what extent you all had dealings with him, Mick. I know you probably would have had a couple of dealings with Michael Lester as well throughout those couple of years that he was available to us, but also as television fans and as sports fans, it's just inseparable from either childhood memories or sports memories, particularly in the height of the summer.
Yeah, I don't know, the few times I did meet him, I loved chewing his ear off about like the memories and things like that. But like, yeah, it's a really sad day, isn't it? Because it's such a kind of a giant of our sporting childhood all the way through adulthood. There's very few people that have like spanned all of our lives, you know, and all of my life. I think he started on the Sunday game, or whatever, he started presenting All-Ireland Finals the year I was born. So he's like, I grew up with Michael Lester as, you know, even when you're at your most, at the, like the most youngest, that's like, oh, you share a name with someone, you remember him quicker, you know, that sort of way. And it's like, I remember like specifically kind of like, there was like an All-Ireland Minor Final in like 1993 or something like that between Galway and Waterford, and him a quip that's like, you know, that he can't lose today because he's, you know, he's got a foot in both camps. And I always think of, like, to this day, of Galway versus Waterford as like the Michael Lester derby, you know what I mean? So it's like someone like that just has such a big impact in your life. But he was also brilliant. Like, I mean, there was so much of what those panels who were so famous, be they Brolly, Spillane and O'Rourke, obviously amazing characters, and in the hurling, Cyril, Tomás, Ger Lachlan, you know, they all got into fights. They all got into arguments. Michael Lester was letting that happen. And he was throwing grenades in half the time. And people wouldn't even notice. And it's only when you're in media, like, oh, and you probably see it, you know, more now than you would have when you were a kid, when you're looking back at it. Like, he knew exactly what he was doing the whole time. And it was just, he created a lot of that brilliant television.
And it's just great across that, because I remember Sports Stadium as a kid in the 80s. And Nigeria, you'd always have to, you'd have a Division 1 game, as it was called then, from England on from 3 till 5. But around that then, like, he'd be there, you know, talking about all sports, from horse racing, motor racing, which is also one of his big loves, darts, golf, everything. And, you know, it was just a brilliant broadcaster on that show as well. Like, he covered all the sports. He was absolutely, you know, unflappable. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant broadcaster. Really, really sad loss.
Absolutely. We'll be chatting a little bit more about that and the Gaelic Games weekend as a whole with David Brady and with Darren O'Sullivan after 8 o'clock. Irish sporting achievement of the weekend, though, Steve-O, has to go to Kate O'Connor.
Ah, massively so. Kate O'Connor celebrating another World Indoor Athletics Championship medal this morning. Her second place finish in the 800 metres last night secured a bronze in the women's pentathlon in Poland. In just over a year, the Dundalk native has won 4 major medals and gold at the World Student Games. It means that only Sonia O'Sullivan and Katrina McKiernan have won more individual medals for Ireland.
Yeah, it's one of those where I think we're all getting used to the kind of peaks and troughs of the multi-event sports, as in like what's important, like even like we know all the rules of all the various sports, but just the sort of tension when there's like a foul jump on the long jump, for example, or she's unable to clear a certain height on the high jump. There's those sorts of investments in those sorts of moments are things that I'm certainly getting used to. And also with Kate O'Connor specifically, you're just very used to her coming out after a brilliant achievement like yesterday and revealing the litany of injuries that she's had to battle against in terms of her preparation for
that's
all of these.
So perfect training, I think was what she called it. Yeah, it sounded worse than that. But
Like an injury in her knee cartilage and an Achilles tendon issue was what she was struggling with on this occasion, and then came out afterwards and said she arrives, and then she had a sty in her eye as well to make matters worse. So
the consistency of 3 world medals in a row, indoor, outdoor, is just like unprecedented nearly in Irish athletics, isn't it?
Yeah. 5 major competitions in a row where she's medaled as well. So she's a superstar. Los Angeles 2028 is going to be mentioned quite a bit in the context of Kate O'Connor, and she's going from strength to strength. So brilliant stuff from her over the course of the weekend. Stephen Doyle, Thank you for Monday's newsround. Plenty more from Steve-O coming from Prague over the next couple of days. When are you off?
See you in Prague. Yeah, I'll be off tomorrow afternoon. So we'll be there for Eamonn Hallgrimsson's first press conference, 10:15 on Wednesday morning.
Very good. Mick, thanks for popping in. Dermot Keane has been in touch to say hopefully Arthur can enjoy a few celebratory drinks on Thursday night and not have to worry about getting up early for the breakfast show. Arthur?
No, I got to go home, actually. I got to go home on Friday morning.
Okay, I'll take that, Dermot Keenan.
Wedding stuff.
Yeah. That won't be happening. Arthur's got bigger fish to fry.
Hopefully he is celebrating. He could be like Tommy Tiernan in Father Ted on the bus, you know, heading home to Galway after an Ireland defeat.
Listen to Radiohead.
Right, that's Monday's news round. We'll take a quick break.